Chapter 18. It feels to Draco that his entire childhood is rushing right through him, like he's soaring and falling, all at once, chasing Blaze around the Quidditch pitch at neck-breaking speed in the middle of the night, shouting at the top of their lungs. Blaze, who was both friend and brother, colleague, competition, confidant, is here, standing in front of him. Alive. Well, by the looks of it. Blaze, who Draco thought had burned to death, is in his mother's foyer, smiling at him like he's just popped in to say hi and see if he can cajole Narcissa to let him stay for dinner, or spend the night, or the weekend, or hell, the entire week, if she'll have him. The way he used to as a boy, when his parents, swamped with ministry business, left him alone with the house elves for days on end. "How is this possible?" asks Draco, even though he wants to ask, "Are you real?" Or just wake up, because if this is a dream, it is worse than the dreams of Blaze dying. But then Blaze comes closer and they hug, and Draco knows, with overwhelming certainty, that Blaze is alive and real and here. They hug for so long that eventually they begin laughing. "Merlin," says Draco, "you smell just like the Slytherin common room." Blaze grins. "So do you, Draco. So do you." Draco pushes him away by the shoulders but doesn't let go, afraid that if he does, Blaze will evaporate. "Look at you," he breathes. "Merlin, look at you." Blaze looks good, fit and healthy, and Merlin, Draco's now just as tall as him. He meets Draco's eyes unflinchingly, and whatever it is that Draco expected to see in his features, anger, blame, disgust, it's absent. Instead, he's smiling playfully, in that way he did when he came up with some prank or trick to play on the girls, and absolutely, definitively, unquestionably needed Draco's help in the execution of it. "You don't look so bad yourself," says Blaze, voice honeysuckle warm. "How is this?" Draco tries again. "How?" "My father's mistress," says Blaze. "She came to warn us." "Us?" he asks, hope rearing its head with such speed and fortitude he's barely able to choke out. "Your parents, they're alive?" "No, they could never be rid of me fast enough," says Blaze with a self-deprecating laugh. "Ha! They pushed me into the flu first." Blaze smiles, but it's humorless. "No. They didn't get out." "Blaze," says Draco, "I'm so sorry." Blaze's family hadn't been the tightest, but that didn't make losing them, especially in such a horrific and unpredictable way, any easier. "You should have reached out to me, told me you were—" Draco still can't bring himself to say it. "You didn't need to deal with it alone." "I wasn't alone," Blaze interjects. "Matilda couldn't take me in, of course, but she was there. Is here. She's become something of a surrogate mother after all this time. She got me a place at l'Université de Médecine Magique, financed my entire education. I can't access the Zabini vaults without alerting the DMLE of my whereabouts." "My parents owl me weekly," says Draco. "You could have contacted me through them." "Matilda put us in touch when they moved out here," says Blaze. "I've been having Friday night dinners with your parents for years, but I had to ask them to keep news of my survival to themselves until they saw you in person. I couldn't risk them owling you while you were in England. Doubt any correspondence between your family and you goes unread." "And I never came here," Draco says, trying to keep the guilt out of his voice. "No, you didn't. Why is that?" Draco doesn't respond. How is he supposed to explain the strange and complex space he inhabits between loving his parents so fiercely that he'd lay down his life for them and all the anger and blame he still carries? Because they should have known better. They should have protected him. Should have fled sooner. Should have given up everything for the chance of letting him walk in the light. "You're not hiding them anymore," says Blaze. Draco blinks at him in confusion, then Blaze reaches up and runs his finger over the bridge of Draco's nose. It's strangely attractive. Takes some of the softness out of you. Make you more masculine. Draco blushes at the praise, though he doesn't know why. It turns out that Blaze has spent the last decade practicing mind healing. He's built quite a reputation for himself, first by working in Hôpital Magique de Paris, and then later by opening his own practice. When he thinks about it, Draco realizes the profession is perfect for him. Blaze was the Slytherin house's greatest confidant. He could always think his way out of any problem, found solutions no one else was able to see. He was who the first years turned to with homesickness. He helped manage depression, quell desperation, heal broken hearts. Draco personally thinks that the suicide rate in his house would have been markedly different, what with the sheer volume of Slytherins who came out of abusive households, if Blaze hadn't been there, willing to crawl out of bed at all hours of the night to sit with their housemates while they cried or screamed or stared at walls. And then a thought occurs to Draco. If Blaze can heal broken minds, who says he can't heal broken communities? "I want you to help me get this reconciliation committee off the ground," he says, leaning forward, elbows on knees, palms up, hands open. "Out of the question," says Blaze. "Don't you miss England?" asks Draco. "Of course I do. But returning, with no guarantee, this project will be your guarantee." "Ah," says Blaze, leaning back, "this is why your parents invited me to dinner. If we can pull this off, you'll be able to come home." "There's not much to come back to," Blaze replies. But they both know it's not true. Blaze has family in England. Two aunts, a cousin, a handful of nieces and nephews. The Zabini Manor may be a burnt-out husk, but the land it is standing on has retained its value. And then there's Hogwarts. "If you have children," says Draco, "you'll want them to go to Hogwarts. You always said that it was impossible to become a true Zabini without it." "My children will have nothing to do with Hogwarts and its stupid system of moral division," snaps Blaze. "Why do you think Slytherins are being targeted?" He goes on. "Qualities are assigned to children who are too young to understand them, to counteract them, or even consider that the house they and their peers were sorted into might not reflect the entirety of their personalities. It's an unhealthy system that divides us when it should be bringing us together." Draco blinks. He's never thought of it like that. Always assumed that the houses were at the core of each student's being. Gryffindors, brave, Slytherins, cowards. "You've never considered it, have you? That the house you're sorted into affects the kind of person you become? Children lean into the things they're praised for, Draco. Hufflepuffs are praised for their kindness, so that's how they problem solve. Not because they are incapable of cunning, but because that will go against what society tells them they are. Ravenclaws problem solve through research because they feel that their opinions are inadequate without piles of data to back them up. But that's not because of their characters or deep-rooted insecurities, though it's often read as such. It's because that's how everyone in their house does it," breathes Draco. "Exactly," says Blaze. "Hogwarts has created house divides so strong that we fought not one, but two wars along their lines. And mind you, it's not every house for itself. It's Gryffindor versus Slytherin with Ravenclaws and Hufflepuffs on the sidelines, clinging to whomever they can, just to survive. And now we're gearing up for a third war, and once more, where's the line drawn? Between Slytherins and everyone else? You tell a kid they're evil every day, and suddenly everyone's surprised that they've embraced what they were taught to be their nature." Blaze's brow furrows, his chin tips up. And he looks so much like he did when they were children that Draco has to resist the sudden urge to reach for him. "You want to fix society? Make sure this doesn't happen again? You need to start with Hogwarts and its bloody house system." Then he notices Draco staring, stiffens, says, "What?" "Nothing," breathes Draco. "I didn't know how much I've missed speaking with you, that's all." Blaze gives Draco a sad smile, and Draco wonders what it must have felt like for him, isolated so completely from everything he knows and loves. "You know what I miss?" Blaze asks abruptly. "Bookstores. I miss walking into a bookstore and being able to browse the whole thing instead of just the two shelves of the English section and the theatre. Merlin, I miss the theatre. I go here too, but my French isn't strong enough and they talk too fast. I end up missing half the words they're saying and 5 o'clock tea. They don't do 5 o'clock tea in France, just coffee. Endless cups of coffee, and they're too good for butterbeer, you know. The French drink wine. Even their children drink wine." "They do not," laughs Draco. "Fine, not in most families," Blaze grumbles. "But there was this one old woman I was treating. Her kids were both grown up by the time she came to me. She told me she always gave her children wine with dinner. To train the palate, apparently. Imagine us having dinner with your parents, or mine for that matter, when we were 11, and them offering us wine. We didn't need to train our palate. Downed Pa's wine like medicine, just to see the world spinning. Remember?" And Draco does remember, lying side by side with Blaze, staring up at the stained glass ceiling as it spun in circles overhead. "We fell asleep right on the ballroom floor. Good thing, too, there was no way we were getting up the stairs to my bedroom." Blaze laughs, and it's full and throaty and terribly beautiful, painfully alive. "Merlin, Blaze, England is your home." Draco remembers Blaze running his finger over a map of the United Kingdom, showing Draco where the French armies came ashore, hoping to occupy Britain. "This is our land," he had said. "We bled for it." "What are you going to do? Live out the rest of your life in exile? Keep pretending that you're dead?" "That land killed my family," says Blaze. "I'm not going back." Draco had forgotten how stubborn Blaze can be. He wishes Pansy was here. She always had a knack for bringing him and Blaze to the same page. "I can't do this without you. You have a personal in with the Wizengamot. Matilda Warbeck has no reason to help me, but you, she would turn the world over for." "I can't help you, Draco. If I do, it'll be like admitting defeat, like I'm saying that I've let go of the past, like what happened to my family was somehow okay." "It wasn't, and no one is saying it was, but likewise, what happened to Fred Weasley wasn't okay." "Don't you dare blame my family for that. You're the one sitting here with a dark mark branded into your flesh. Rookwood might be my mother's first cousin, but you let him into the fucking school. You did that, and my family paid the price." "Yes. And guess what? Potter may have defended you when you were arrested because Narcissa helped him, and everything Potter wanted, Potter received. But you and your family got off on a technicality, and everyone knows it." "Yes. Yes, yes. Are you going to defend yourself, or are you just going to accept everything I say? You're a Death Eater." "Yes. A murderer." Draco averts his eyes. "Yes. A monster. Yes. And now you want to be a savior." "No, listen. I can't go back in time and change what happened during the war. I did what I did because, given my choices, it was all I could do. Perhaps I should have let Voldemort kill me rather than take the mark or sacrifice my loved ones in order to save dozens of others. But I did what I did and helped in what ways I could." "Helped? When the fuck did you help?" "Blaze, I could have had that cabinet fixed the first day I saw it." "Oh," Blaze says. "Yeah," says Draco. Blaze shakes his head. "That's why you were never sentenced for it." "Yeah," Draco says again. "I thought you just had really good lawyers," says Blaze with a shrug. "That too," Draco replies. "I've spent the last decade convinced that the world's no longer got use for me. And I can remain on the sidelines. Watch those morons at the rattle start another war. Move out here with mother and father. Start a shipping company in France. Bother you at work in my spare time." Blaze smiles at that. "Sounds like a good life to me." "Blaze, If I can't convince you to work with me, how the hell am I supposed to convince an entire country? You're asking too much of me, whispers Blaze. You are my friend, Draco says, finally reaching out and grasping Blaze's hand. My brother, don't make me do this alone. Blaze stares silently out the window for a long moment, then down at their clasped hands, until finally looking up at Draco, eyes raking over his face like he's trying to see inside him, read his mind, his soul. His thumb skims briefly over Draco's knuckles, then he squeezes his hand and lets go. If I partner with you on this, says Blaze slowly, licking his lips, you can't leave me for dead. Draco wants to say that he didn't leave Blaze for dead, that it was Blaze who left Draco, abandoned him to life, but he keeps his mouth shut. If the price of getting Blaze back was losing him for a decade, Draco is happy to pay it. If we succeed, Blaze continues, we succeed together, but if we fail, we fail together too. Blaze nods. A reconciliation committee then? Draco grins. Draco dresses for dinner slowly. He summons a set of white linen summer robes from Malfoy Manor, takes his time putting them on. He wonders what Harry is doing. If he's dressing for dinner, who he'll be having dinner with? Draco can picture Harry's smile, eyes sparkling in the candlelight, hand reaching across the table to grasp Ginevra's hand. Draco forces himself to keep picturing it, despite the twisting in his gut. He should get used to the idea of seeing Harry with Ginevra. It'll be good for him. It'll help him get over this, whatever this is. A knock sounds on his door, and Draco turns to face it. Blaze waltzes into the room without so much as a by your leave, then stops, mouth slightly parted. Oh, he says stupidly, staring at Draco. What? Draco looks down at himself, smoothing the lapels of his robes. He'd thought he looked quite handsome in them. You think they're too casual? Should I change? No, says Blaze. They're good. They suit you. Draco raises a skeptical eyebrow. No, Blaze repeats. I think I was expecting you to still be 17 when I walked through the door, all scrawny and snotty, whining. Draco thumps Blaze unceremoniously over the head. I was neither snotty nor whiny, says Draco. I was perfectly charming. Everyone loved me. Yes, Draco, laughs Blaze. Of course they did. Come on, your parents' guests are starting to arrive. Draco nods triumphantly and follows Blaze from the room.